Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. In the wake of the targeted massacre in Norway, we will begin with an analysis of the relationship between the resurgence of far-right extremism and political violence. Jonathan Birdwell, a researcher on the Violence and Extremism Program at Demos in London, joins us to discuss how the extreme right in Europe has not only become more palatable, but they have already exerted a gravitational pull on the centre, with British Prime Minister Cameron and German Chancellor Merkel both recently proclaiming the death of multiculturalism. Then we'll examine further the rise of the radical right and Christian fundamentalism here in the United States with Frank Schaeffer, the son of one of the founders of the religious right. He will discuss the dangerous notion pervasive on the religious right amongst Christian fundamentalists and some Tea Party activists that equates godliness with a hatred of government. Then finally, we'll talk about a nuclear-armed country at war with itself, Pakistan. Washington Post correspondent Pamela Constable, the author of a new book, Playing with Fire, joins us to talk about a country she has reported on extensively, one that is riddled with corruption, devastated by natural disasters, and terrorized by Islamic extremists. Joining us now is Jonathan Birdwell, who is a researcher specializing in counterterrorism, public behavior, and drug policy at Demos. He is the co-author of the article now out in Foreign Policy called Rise of the Radical Right. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jonathan Birdwell.
Thank you very much for having me.
The study that you've done for Demos and written about, of course, in Foreign Policy suggests that things in Europe are far more dangerous than anyone thinks. Is that a fair way to characterize your work?
I think that is fair. I should say that our research is still ongoing. We're actually more than just over halfway through doing the research. Now, that research is looking at the rise of the far right. In particular, we're looking at street-based movements, and we're looking across Europe. We're doing a survey of far-right activists as well as sympathizers, and only halfway through, we have 6,000 responses on that. And we are also going to 6 different European countries to interview far-right members face-to-face. And just this week, before the Norway attacks, I was in Copenhagen, actually, in Denmark, interviewing far-right activists and leaders. So we're still in the process of doing this research, but I would say absolutely that we've seen in the past couple years the growth of far-right activity. And it's been a concern. It's been a growing concern, particularly in the UK. But obviously, the attacks in Norway kind of take it to the next level. I don't think anyone was prepared for these kind of terrorist attacks. But if you look at the rhetoric, the inflammatory rhetoric that is pervasive among far-right groups, as well as far-right political parties that have gained power, I think it was only a matter of time that some individual was going to take the next step into violence.
And Jonathan Birdwell, the judge in Norway heard closed testimony and revealed that Breivik had claimed that some contact with other cells. You're suggesting in the Foreign Policy article that he may well have had contact with Britain's, the English Defence League, which is a far-right group in England. Anything developing on that?
Well, they've been reporting that. The latest is, so in his manifesto, Breivik claims to have met members of the EDL when it was in its, and even to have advised members of the EDL and leaders of the EDL in their kind of early phases. Now, the EDL leadership has, you know, vociferously contested this, but the EDL, the English Defense League, is an organization that is quite loose. It has, on Facebook, say, 72,000 members. So, inevitably, and a lot of these members are very active on internet chat forums. So I think it's absolutely inevitable that Breivik had conversations with EDL members. The extent to which he was in contact with the leaders of the organization, that, so far, we don't know. We will just have to wait and see, really. But I know the police are in the UK are very interested in this. In particular, he makes mention to a meeting that happened way back in April 2002 of this group that he claims to be a member of, the Knights Templar, in London. And he even claims that one of his kind of mentors is English. So there are definitely hints at connections between the two. But I think it is very important to bear in mind that the EDL is quite a large organization. So it's obviously very difficult for the leadership to keep an eye on the contacts of every single individual member.
But Jonathan Birdwell, tell me about the Knights Templar. Does it exist? Has anybody done any legwork on that?
You know, that is really one of the most fascinating things for me as a researcher of this, because up until now, I haven't heard anything about the Knights Templar. I mean, obviously, they're a medieval organization associated with the Crusades. Now, in our research, we often come across extremist groups, especially on the right, who are kind of enmeshed in conspiracy theories involving, you know, Zionist occupied governments, a new world order, and they often do include organizations like the Freemasons and Knights Templar. So it's actually really fascinating to see someone who is also on the far right, but who is a stated member of these organizations. He claims to be a member. So I have not come across the Knights Templar as a far right group thus far. But I think, obviously, now the spotlight is on them. So we shall see what information comes up in the next couple of weeks.
Again, I'm speaking with Jonathan Birdwell, who is a researcher specializing in counterterrorism and far-right political groups in Europe at Demos. He's the co-author of the article now out on foreignpolicy.com called Rise of the Radical Right. One of the things that I find disturbing is that in this extensive manifesto that Breivik has written, posting it an hour or so before the massacre that he carried out, he mentions that he went to Prague to get hold of a phony police badge that he wore on this uniform to fool the police on the island and be able to kill them and then start massacring these young Labour Party youth leaders, striking a blow, a very politically aimed blow at this particular political party. What is the Eastern European connection here? Because the Jobbik Party in Hungary is growing, and of course the Eastern European countries, of course, in many were sympathetic to the Nazis and to the occupiers. So give me a sense of that. We all know that there is little to no sympathy for the Quislings, the Nazi occupiers from World War II, I mean the Nazi collaborators in World War II, and that thus the right in Norway is pretty small. As I imagine it is in Denmark because of the legacy of World War II. Am I correct in that?
You are correct. I mean, I wouldn't say it's non-existent at all. And in Denmark especially, you know, there are a handful of quite fringe groups, some that have Nazi connotations, others that are trying to disassociate themselves from Nazi connotations. But in our field work, we heard that actually in Sweden, which was not occupied during World War II, you have a much larger Nazi group contingent because of that. Now, the Eastern European connection is absolutely very interesting. And unfortunately, as I said, we're still only halfway through our research. But we are surveying far-right members in Eastern Europe. We're planning to go to Hungary as well. And there is a rise, similar as it is in Western Europe, there's also a rise in Eastern Europe, which you might think is surprising because they have far fewer numbers in terms of Muslim immigration to Eastern Europe, which is, of course, has been the kind of the catalyst for the rise of far-right groups in Western Europe. But it's definitely on the rise in Eastern Europe as well, in Hungary, in Bulgaria. When we started out on this research, we spoke with contacts that we had who were affiliated with the English Defense League as part of our research, and they said, look east. So I think there is definitely a huge need to look more closely at the rise of this phenomenon in Eastern Europe as well as Western Europe.
Well, it would seem, though, that what is disturbing is that over the last decade, the extreme right in Europe has become more palatable, and I suppose that's to some extent reinforced by recent statements from British Prime Minister David Cameron and the German Chancellor Angela Merkel, both announcing the death of multiculturalism, and that Nicolas Sarkozy's banning of the burqa has certainly given him a boost in the polls in France. So to what extent is the horse out of the barn and down the paddock, as they say?
It's very interesting. And you know, you have seen the growth of far-right political parties gaining votes, gaining power in France, in Denmark, in Sweden, in Italy, in Hungary. And because these fringe groups are having such success, I think that is exerting, as we say in the article, and it's exerting a kind of gravitational pull on the center so that mainstream politicians like David Cameron, like Angela Merkel, like Nicolas Sarkozy, are adopting, are beginning to say the same things about pointing out the downsides of immigration, as you said, declaring that multiculturalism is dead. And I think they have to walk a very, very fine line, because clearly this is an issue that concerns a lot of people, and therefore mainstream politicians have to talk about it so as to take the oxygen away from those on the fringes. But at the same time, they have to do so in a very measured and conscious way so as not to fan the flames of far-right groups and individuals, but to show the broader constituency and population that these are issues that mainstream politicians aren't ignoring. I think that's really important.
Again, I'm speaking with Jonathan Birdwell, who is a researcher with Demos, where he specializes in counterterrorism and right-wing political groups, which he's investigating in the midst of doing a comprehensive investigation across Europe, and in not just Western Europe, but Eastern Europe as well, as he's just mentioned. He's the co-author of the article out now in foreignpolicy.com called Rise of the Radical Right. There are, of course, when we were talking earlier about the Knights Templar and trying to figure out whether it's a figment of Breivik's imagination or whether it's a real phenomenon, the, harking back, of course, to the Crusades has paradoxical echoes of Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda. But there is, of course, an anti-immigrant website here and a group here in the United States led by a fellow called Spence, which calls itself the Gates of Vienna, which is, of course, a reference to how far Muslims encroached into Europe during the Middle Ages.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So what do you know about the American the American element here?
I think throughout the manifesto, he cites a number of people that are described as the kind of counter-jihad. In addition to the Gates of Vienna website, there's the Jihad Watch website run by Robert Spencer, there's Daniel Pipes, there's the other woman who made such a fuss about the mosque down near Ground Zero.
Pamela Geller, yes.
Exactly, yes. And obviously the narrative of these individuals is something that Anders Breivik, you know, subscribes to wholly. Now, I don't think, obviously, that's not to say that they're responsible. They don't advocate violence. But I think they do need to accept some responsibility for the way in which they talk about these issues. And the rhetoric they use. And these individuals, you know, are constantly heaping blame on conservative Muslim imams who don't advocate violence, but who they think provide an ideology which inevitably leads to violence. So I think they need to consider their own position and recognize that the logic applies on the other way as well. So they are providing the infrastructure for individuals who might go off and do absolutely horrendous violent actions like Anders Breivik.
Well, Jonathan Birdwell, Daniel Pipes, who was mentioned in Breivik's manifesto as being somebody that supports this notion that Christians have to fight back against this Islamic onslaught. And so much of the rhetoric over here in the political right and the Tea Party right of the Republican Party, fueled by people like Robert Spencer and Pamela Geller and Daniel Pipes, is frankly bordering on the ludicrous. Many states in the Midwest and other places have in fact passed laws banning Sharia law, which is never on the table. Talk about being proactive against a myth. But you can't dismiss somebody like a Daniel Pipes, because he was appointed by George W. Bush to head up the United States Institute of Peace, which is funded by the United States and set up by the United States Congress. It's quite a prestigious organization.
Yeah. Well, I won't question the wisdom of that. Had appointment, but
well, you wouldn't. You're not going to question the wisdom.
There are legitimate concerns, probably, that people have about immigration and radical Islam, and especially in the U.S., where although it has quite a high population of Muslims, not many people, especially in the Midwest, probably interact with Muslims, and a lot of what they see on the media is this stuff about it's just kind of scaremongering. So you know, I'm not saying that everything that he says is problematic. Or wrong, I'm just saying that he needs to, and others like him, need to apply the same logic that they do when it comes to al-Qaeda-inspired terrorism and what they call Islamists to the way in which they speak about what they see as a legitimate concern. They should not be using inflammatory rhetoric that gives people a sense of there is an existential crisis and a coming, you know, clash of civilizations. Because that's it's just... It's just not the case.
But I think what is the case, at least what you're arguing in your article, The Rise of the Radical Right, at foreignpolicy.com, Jonathan Birdwell, is that we've had plenty of examples recently of this notion that mainstream politicians are spineless, soft-boiled, I'm quoting from the article, spineless, soft-boiled, venal, self-serving slaves to political correctness and orthodoxy. That is exactly what Breivik has been was motivated to do. He believed that the ruling party in Norway were selling the country out to Marxism and political correctness, or a Marxist version of political correctness. But you cite examples of the banking bailout, which of course helped form the Tea Party over here, the Eurozone crisis, and the more recent News International hacking scandal, which showed how much politicians were in the pocket of this media baron and how they were cravenly manipulated by him and sought, groveled before him, if you will. And so explain that further, because it seems to me that these feelings are fairly universally felt, but I guess on the far right, they take it a little further.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. I think you're seeing across the board a disillusionment towards the establishment, and a disillusionment obviously driving the Tea Party into mainstream politicians, who they see as, you know, as I said, venal, and ignoring the concerns of the common person. And I think, you know, a lot of this is the pressures of globalization. You know, a lot of, not everyone is going to come out on top as globalization continues. And it's up to politicians to frame that and explain that to individuals so that they don't have a complete loss of trust in our institutions and our representative leaders. Now, it is definitely more pronounced, or what it is pronounced, certainly among far-right groups. And what is really interesting that we've seen a little bit of in Denmark is that you have these formal political parties, these far-right parties, gaining ground and getting into power. And yet, as soon as they do that, they're not acting as a representative for these fringe groups. As soon as these, what we would say, far-right political parties are gaining power, the fringes are viewing them as sellouts, because they're talking about integration rather than repatriation, so sending all immigrants back. So you inevitably have this paradox where you think, well, how do we prevent violent individuals like Anders Breivik? Well, maybe they need representation within governments. But actually what we've seen so far is that even when far-right groups are in governments, that's not enough. That's not a kind of... that doesn't act as a kind of safety valve or pressure, release of a pressure valve for those who might be more inclined to do even more extreme and violent actions.
The Tea Party over here, of course, was formed in response to what happened on Wall Street, and it has become the tail that wags the dog with the Republican Party, and they're behind this economic hostage crisis we have here, where the full faith and credit of the United States is possibly up for grabs while they try and extort concessions from the president. So this is a major power play from this minority far right wing group. And what's, I think, interesting about the connections to the Norwegian mass murderer Breivik is that he was a member of the Norwegian Progress Party, which has a very similar history to the Tea Party. It started out as an anti-tax party and then segued into an anti-immigrant party.
Yes, no, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of similarities across countries of the formation of these far-right parties. And then obviously, you know, you can't, as with the Tea Party, you know, there are many different shades to the Tea Party, many people within the Tea Party that have different views, and it's the same within the Progress Party in Norway. But I think it's also the fringe groups that we really need to worry about. Those, I mean, actually with Breivik, you know, he did participate in the political mainstream and then went back out on the fringes and still was motivated to do this violence. So I think the next decade, we're really going to see a rise of far-right activity, of anti-immigrant kind of politics, and it's quite troubling, frankly.
Well, Jonathan Birdwell, I thank you so much for joining us here.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Jonathan Birdwell, who's a researcher specializing in counterterrorism and far-right political groups. He is with Demos in the United Kingdom. He's also the co-author of the article now out on foreignpolicy.com called Rise of the Radical Right. We're going to be taking a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the rise of the far right here in the United States.
Well, I'm going to tell you, fascists, you may be surprised.